Guess what day it is?
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio. This is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
610. Pete McMurray in for Steve Cochran. Steve back later on in the week. Dave Bennett riding shotgun. Mary's here. Steve's here. This is nice. One big happy family on.
Good to have you here, Pete.
So glad you're here.
Oh, welcome, Pete.
It's such a welcome sight.
You look great.
Now I hate you guys.
What'd you bring us?
Do I have to bring gifts every single day?
No, well, it would be nice.
I think Mike is the only one that's nice to me on the show.
What do you mean?
Come on.
Nice to you. Mm-hmm. Come on.
Yep. Mike.
I will tell you, sometimes Steve gives us actual cash to go get food. So if you want to hand over some cash, I'll go get breakfast for everybody.
It's all about food. It's all about me giving you things.
I don't want food.
Everybody have their taxes done?
No.
Yep.
I am in the process. I will sign them and mail them today.
Okay. Everybody's last minute. I'm last minute this year. I don't know why I waited till the bitter end. I was talking to my wife on Monday. I'm like, what are we doing?
You guys don't seem like procrastinators. One of you.
My wife is very type A. We usually have it done mid-February. We're done.
Well, what's the deal?
I don't know. We're dragging our feet this year.
I always wait till after the college basketball season.
And if I owe,
win money in a pool? Why?
No, but I just don't have the time until the cats are done.
Elise Glink will help us at 6:37 this morning for people like us that are procrastinators and, you know, last-minute tax people. Yeah.
Oh, good.
All right, time for the 6 at 6.
Now it's time to move on to a little something we call...
The Steve Cochran Show presents the top 6 at 6.
That's the best number I've heard yet.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Yes.
6.
Lucky guess.
My favorite number is 6.
The top 6 at 6 on 720 WGN.
The U.S. accusing Russia of a Syria cover-up. The U.S. says Moscow has released false narrative to mislead the world about the chemical attack in Syria last week. Russia says it's Syrian rebels. Now, Steve, do they really believe that? Really?
Does Washington believe that?
No, the Russians.
No, I think the Russians are in full propaganda mode, right?
Well, yes, they are.
Seems like it.
And Rex Tillerson in Moscow today. We'll talk to ABC's Karen Travers coming up at 6:19. Oh, boy. When I saw this yesterday, I just could not believe it. White House Press Secretary Sean Spicer apologizes after the Hitler comment. Now, I don't know about you. Being on the radio, there's two words that you want to leave out of your vocabulary. Mm-hmm. Holocaust and Hitler. And if you're the United States Press Secretary, you never bring that up. Which means he's not very smart, which tells me, is Sean Spicer qualified for the job?
Yeah. Or the other possibility, too, and it's one you don't really want to believe, is he trying to, did he do it on purpose? And is there that false narrative? Because, you know, there's some folks who work in the White House who maybe believe that.
Did you watch the footage?
I did, yes. It was very hard to watch.
It was so painful to watch because he was digging a hole and he was trying to get out of the hole and he couldn't get out of the hole and he kept digging deeper and deeper. Is he qualified to be our press secretary?
You had someone as despicable as Hitler who didn't even sink to using chemical weapons. No. I think when you come to sarin gas, he was not using the gas on his own people the same way that Assad is doing. There was not he brought him into the Holocaust Center. I understand that. But I'm saying in the way that Assad used them, where he went into towns, dropped them down to innocent into the middle of towns. It was brought to, so the use of it.
It's so painful to watch. And as the words are coming out of his mouth, I'm thinking, what? You're supposed to be smarter than everyone in the White House. You're the gatekeeper here. Don't say stuff like that.
You are the mouthpiece for the administration.
Yeah, and the Anti-Defamation League and some other groups yesterday on Twitter saying, oh, by the way, there really weren't Holocaust centers. What are you talking about with that? That was another part of it, too.
Concentration camps.
Right. That's what they were called.
Yeah. Thank you, Dave. Number 3, top 6 at 6, President Trump says we need help from the president of China with regards to escalating tensions over North Korea, or we're going to do it ourselves. What's going to happen there? I mean, we got this Russia stuff going on now. Sean Spicer, and don't forget about North Korea. That's on the back burner, which is on the front burner last week. I can't keep up, man. I don't mean the laugh, but this is, it's a mess.
Yeah, there's going to be, it's going to be one or the other, right?
Tammy Duckworth and Dick Durbin issuing letters demanding explanations from United CEO. Attorney Karen Conti joins us at 7:20 this morning. What compensation will that doctor receive who got dragged off that United plane?
Speaking of a mess.
Who is still in the hospital.
Yes.
And good for him.
And who hired a law firm here in Chicago.
Oh, he did?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, I didn't hear that.
Demetria.
Okay, good to know. The Daily Show's Hasan Minhaj will host the White House Correspondents' Dinner. Guess what? President Trump said, I can't make it this year. Okay. And tonight's the night at Wrigley Field. The World Series champion Chicago Cubs get their rings tonight. And a member of the show needs to be there. I am volunteering. I am going tonight.
Are you going?
I am going. With my wife and my son, Charlie.
Very Do you actually have tickets this time, or are you just going to be walking around?
Who needs three?
And you get to get in the park.
I have tickets, and I have a ticket to get into the park next to the park, that little plaza area, which I'm going to check out. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I can report back.
By the way, there is a video on our website, WGNradio.com, Violetta and Kevin in the park at Wrigley, if you'd like to check it out ahead of time.
Do they have a ticket to get in?
I don't think so.
After 3 o'clock on game day, if it's a night game, you have to have a ticket.
So what did they do after they give the rings out? Now tomorrow's game is going to be kind of anticlimactic, right?
I don't know.
There's no banner raising. There's no rings.
So here's my question. Game time is 7:05,
7:10. 7:05, 6:30 for the ring ceremony.
6:30. Mm-hmm. Okay, so I have to rush my wife.
I couldn't answer that question.
My wife is early for everything in her life.
Okay.
Sporting events, always late. Always.
Oh, well,
it's like, Sarah, you got to speed it up.
Put the pressure on.
Let's go. You got to walk through the crowd. She thinks if we get there right at 6:30, we're good.
You got to be in her seats.
You got to be in her seats at 6:15.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's, I think, what Cubs are telling ticket holders.
I will tell you, I will cry tonight.
You won't cry.
I'm going to do it for the show.
Okay. Thank you for your generosity.
You're welcome. Coming up next, we'll talk to Karen Travers from ABC News. Let's take a look at traffic at 6:17, Mayor.
The Perfect. Steve Maybe Cochran Show.
We're not going into Siri, but when I see people using horrible, horrible chemical weapons, which they agreed not to use under the Obama administration, but they violated it.
They said they got rid of them.
Hey, look, what I did should have been done by the Obama administration a long time before I did it. And you would have had a much better, I think Zero would be a lot better off right now than it has been.
720 WGN 620, Secretary of State Rex Tillerson in Moscow today. Let's bring in Karen Travers from ABC News. Karen, the Secretary of State had some tough words for Russia yesterday. Is he going to get a meeting with Putin?
That is not yet certain, but it certainly sounds like the Russians are at least dangling the idea of a meeting with Tillerson and Putin out there, but they're not yet saying whether or not it will or will not happen. We do know that Tillerson and Lavrov are going to take some questions from reporters later today, which should be a very fascinating press conference given the tough words that we've already heard from both sides.
So what's the schedule today? They get together in the morning and we figure out, hey, maybe he will meet with Putin?
Yes. It sounds like the Russians know if they want to have that happen or not and are just toying, I think. You know, oh, maybe it'll happen. We'll see if we can add it to the schedule. Right now, Lavrov, the foreign minister, and Tillerson are having an extended meeting. They're calling it a working lunch. They were meeting earlier this morning, and it still continues. And as our reporter who's there said, they basically just brought in food so they could keep talking.
The Russians said yesterday that it was Syrian rebels that dropped the chemical weapons. Really? They expect us to believe that?
They're also saying that there was a terrorist warehouse that contained chemical weapons. This was a statement from the defense ministry, a claim.
Where does that come from?
Their intelligence is what they're saying. But they say that that was struck during an attack. The administration yesterday very strongly pushing back on this, saying that Russia is wrong. The U.S. intelligence is overwhelming and it is right. And they accuse the Russians of trying to cover up what really happened there, trying to shield the Assad regime. They say there is no evidence of an explosion, but there is strong physical evidence of leakage, as they say, that happens after a munitions drop of chemical weapons. So why are they doing this? The administration says that they're trying to cover up and help out Bashar al-Assad, and Russia now has to choose to stop this campaign of disinformation.
Why? Why is that? Why are the Russians siding with Syria? I just don't get it.
It's complicated, I think, is the easy answer. They have made it clear that they are on Bashar al-Assad's side.
Is it because it has to do with money? They're selling them arms and planes and weapons?
I don't know.
Wow. Karen Travers from ABC News. Steve, you want to jump in here?
Just that I saw this, Putin, I guess, gave an interview on state television today where he sort of went off on Donald Trump as well. What is that storyline developing there?
Well, it's, you know, there has been just a lot of tough talk from both sides in recent days and weeks. And I think it's interesting because certainly the big overshadowing issue of Russia and the Trump administration. I mean, there's still a couple headlines today about Trump associates. The White House is saying, you know, you all want to jump on that and say that we're so close to them. But look, like, we're all using this tough talk. I think right now with Tillerson there, this is the most high stakes, high profile visit of a Trump administration official to Russia. And I think there's a bit of swagger going on of everybody trying to, you know, put out a tough posture for the press and for the public because there's so much at stake right now. And they're trying to set a tone for these meetings going forward. I mean, Sergey Lavrov has been in this position for some time. He has worked with many U.S. secretaries of state. I wonder how much of this is a little bit of bluster because there's a new guy in town with Rex Tillerson.
Rex Tillerson in Moscow today, which has taken a back seat to the Sean Spicer incident. And does he have a press briefing later today?
He does not, but that is not shouldn't be read into anything because of what happened yesterday with those comments. The president is going to be meeting with the NATO Secretary General today at the White House, and they're going to have a press conference later this afternoon. So the standard is when the president takes questions and that's on the schedule, the press secretary does not have a briefing.
So we sit and wait and see what happens today. Karen, thank you.
Thank you.
All right. It's 6:24. It's 7:20. WGN. Pete McMurray in for Steve Cochran, 6:27. Dave, I don't know if you noticed our guest today around 9:20 this morning. He's got a special tonight on Comcast Sportsnet.
Pat Boyle, the studio host for the Blackhawks, the intermission host.
Stud.
And pre and post game.
Love Pat. Known him forever.
He's tough to book. He is very tough to get on the show.
Yeah, we had an in this time, which
really?
Is nice. Yeah.
What, you know him?
I do, but I had to call in a favor yesterday to get him on the show. So that'll be nice. Yeah. Mary, do you know who booked Pat?
Yes. I was able to get to him.
Look at that.
Yeah.
It's good stuff right there.
While we were sitting on the couch last night together.
Right. So. Talking. Oh, wow. Do you really want to talk to Pete tomorrow?
And we were.
Please.
That's you know what? Pete,
Cochran will be back.
Say, he was talking
just
about
talk
being
to
very
him
busy
once.
Today. And I asked him, are you really sure? You don't have to do it if you don't want to, honey. Last night we were watching ESPN. They aired their first two episodes of We the Fan, Section 250.
Yes.
The thing on the Bears fans. It is so well done. It is so well shot. And it's, for me, I am not a super fan. So to watch these people who live and die for the Bears, I think you're one of them. Aren't you a fan like that?
I am Section 251. Okay. And it bothers me that I'm not in
this
special.
You're such a wannabe.
I am.
You're like one over from Section 2.
I am a super fan, and you have your group of people, and you tailgate. It's a community. What I have it on DVR. Did they show the tailgating and in the stadium? What is it?
They did. They showed tailgating. They showed like when they do these people watch games together, even when they're away games. So they showed them at their houses, you know, watching games and things. And they do some clips of different local things. Like you hear Jeff Joniak making a few calls or whatever. And then our buddy David Kaplan is the audio of him saying the greatest city in the world is featured as well. So
it's, how is Kaplan in this special and I'm not?
Just his voices. Well, maybe you're in one of the later episodes because I think there's eight.
No,
eight
they never
cars.
Aren't you on the Fox pregame show every week?
I appreciate that, Dave.
Well,
thank
sampled.
You for mentioning
with our
that.
Buddy Luke and Ellis.
Yes.
So why aren't you?
They the narrator though is their beer vendor for their section. Their beer vendor that knows them. He narrates the whole thing, so it's really cool because he knows all these people, and so it's really cool.
Do you guys go to Bear games?
I do.
I mean, it's a hassle for a lot of people because you got to drive in from the suburbs and then you got to deal with the traffic and then you have to deal with the parking. Soldier Field is not easy. They don't make it easy for people. Yeah. And if you don't have a parking pass, you have to park on the other side of Michigan Avenue and then you have to walk a mile and a half.
That's what I do.
To get in.
That's what I do.
I only go for warm games.
So
you're a
there you go,
fan.
Pete. You're
so that means
there's
no.
your preseason tickets.
Yes. Right, right there. You go.
If you want my free preseason tickets,
okay.
So it's good. So I need to watch it.
Oh, it's excellent. Everybody should watch it. It's like good, and it's shot really well. Like really great camera work.
But I feel like when they show Chicago fans, we look like meatheads.
It's
even though we are,
fans.
And I'm a bigger meathead than anybody.
You're like the biggest meathead representative.
And
fan.
I wear my jerseys you to do? Every game.
All these people have the bear gear is. You know, plentiful in this. So,
what number do you wear?
I switch it around.
Okay,
I do Bud Kiss. I have Doug Plank.
Okay,
I have Jerry Fontenot.
I have
Jerry Fontenot.
Jerry Fontenot. I still have Greg Olson. He was my favorite.
I have a Steve Fuller. But if it's a big game, I pull out Bud Kiss.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, I used to have a Peyton. Someone stole it. Yeah.
I'm sure you could probably find one.
I mean, I love Peyton, but Bud Kiss is gritty, you know. He would be tailgating with us. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now we have all the Cutlers. What are we going to do with them?
Throw them away.
Yeah.
Get rid of them. No reason. No one's picked him up.
Wow.
No. Right?
No.
Okay.
No.
6:49, Pete McMurray in for Steve Cochran. We're talking taxes on the phone with us, Elise Glink, thinkglink.com/taxes. We were talking about the home office. Let's talk about for the normal person who has a laptop or a computer at their house. They use electricity. I think 100% of the people, they go home and they check their emails. They're taking text messages from work. How much can they write off, Elise?
Well, if you're just at home doing your own kind of work, you may, probably can't write off the home office deduction. But if you do have, if you don't have a regular office, so you work from home, and you're, and so many people do that, by the way, you know, more and more, there's an expectation that as many as 60% of Americans will officially work from home by, I don't know if it's 2020 or 2030, I'd have to look that number up, but it's a very significant portion of the population. And so, you know, if you're one of those people, you can certainly not only write off the 10% that you're using in your house, or maybe it's 20%, but you can also write off all of the equipment that you need for it. So especially if you've got things that you use exclusively for business, if the IRS ever came calling and said, hey, we want to do an audit, you'd be able to say, hey, look, this phone line is really truly for business. In fact, that's what I did for years when I was doing radio talk show hosting for a station in Atlanta. I had two phone lines that were connected to my ISDN that I couldn't use for anything else. And so when tax time came around, we had the portion of the house that we were using as the home office deduction and the phone lines and the computer system and all the other radio equipment that we had and the chairs and the tables and the curtains and whatever else went into that particular space. And
right.
So that's absolutely what you can do. But there are other kinds of deductions that you can think of as well. And it's worth it because the standard deduction right now this year, for last year, 2016, it's $6,300 for singles and $12,600 for married couples filing jointly. And that sounds like a pretty high bar. And for a lot of people who have W-2 jobs that pay them, you know, $50,000, $60,000, $70,000 a year, they're going to go with the standard deduction and be
right.
fine. But mortgage interest could put you over that, charitable deductions. There are miscellaneous expenses that can just add up to, if it adds up to 2% of your adjusted gross income, so tax preparation fees count, job hunting expenses, business car expenses, professional dues count. And then for medical expenses, this is sort of actually a very large number. If you or your spouse are 65 years or older, or you turn 65 in the tax year, which means last year, you're allowed to deduct unreimbursed medical care expenses that exceed 7.5% of adjusted gross income. And by unreimbursed, we mean the stuff that you don't get a check from your insurance company.
Sure.
But it might be home health care workers. right?
Okay.
If you needed a full-time caregiver at home and you had to pay out of pocket for that and you didn't get reimbursed and that added up to a lot, that might be a deduction that you could take. There are a lot of them.
What about mileage, parking, if you just have a normal job, mileage to and from work? How about if you have to pay for parking, if someone comes in from the suburbs, they have to pay for a parking garage downtown?
No, sorry.
Can't do that?
That's just part of the regular job. Unfortunately, given how expensive it is to park these days in downtown Chicago, that one doesn't work so well. I do want to give you a couple of other things, though, that you can do to reduce your taxes. So we already talked about SEP IRAs or traditional IRAs or a KEO, and you know, if you're employed or self-employed, that's great. If you have a health savings account, so if you participate in a high deductible health care plan, many companies are putting in these kinds of insurance programs, you can fund an HSA up to April 18th, and those contributions are also tax deductible. The funds grow tax free, and you have to use them to pay for qualified medical expenses, but then you don't get taxed when they're withdrawn. So that's actually a really nice thing to do. Let's see. I don't know. There's a lot of other things in the bag of tricks, but I want to give you another chance to ask me a question.
Well, I was just thinking my wife needs to buy business clothes. Can I write that off? How about dry cleaning?
No, but I will tell you that when I was on WGN-TV for years, and I know Andrea will appreciate this, there was a long discussion every year with my accountant over whether we could deduct the expense of doing television makeup.
Okay.
And he said, I really don't think you can deduct television makeup. And I said, why not? I buy it for the station. I leave it at the station. I only wear it when I go on television.
Right.
I said, have you seen this stuff? Nobody would wear this outside.
Dave?
I do.
I think he finally.
Yeah.
Dave does.
Dave,
I do.
You write it off.
Yeah.
How much is makeup? $10?
Well, I mean, there is some makeup provided by the station.
Okay.
But not
you like
on a
your
regular
own.
Basis.
You like to go high end Mac makeup.
No.
Go down to Oak Street.
It's not that, but
the Mac store.
But it is. I don't know. It's whatever it is. $50-$60 a shot.
Really?
Why? It's not cheap.
Okay. So you write it off.
My accountant told me I could.
Elise, I feel like there's a little more wiggle room with guys like us. Like sporting events, we go see movies so we can talk about it on the air. I think there's wiggle room there.
You know, I'm not a CPA, so I don't actually want to give anybody that kind of personal advice.
Right.
I would just encourage you to go talk to your person, your tax preparer. But here's something else that a mistake that I think people make quite often. Oftentimes, you feel like you have to get your hand on your refund check just as quickly as you can, and so you go to, you know, your local tax preparer, and they're like, hey, we could give you this card, and you could walk right out with it, and then you can just, you know, have your refund today. What they don't tell you is those cards will cost you as much as a third or even a half of your whole refund. So I don't want anybody to do that. It is a terrible thing to do. It is expensive. It costs you money. What I do want you to do is talk to the IRS. When you file, you can give them your bank account number, and they'll do something called direct deposit. And they will put your direct deposit right into your bank account for you. It usually takes somewhere around 3 weeks or a little bit less. Some refunds do take longer, especially if you've been the victim of identity theft. But this way, every single dollar that's coming to you is coming to you, and you don't get a penalty of, like, you know, 50% for these companies that because you just needed that minute. So if you can just wait, you'll get all of your money. Plus, at IRS.gov, there's a tool called Where's My Refund, and it'll help you check the exact status of when that deposit's going to be made.
Thank you for mentioning the direct deposit. We do that every single year. It's very quick. Unfortunately, it goes straight into my wife's account, and I don't see any of it. Which is rough stuff.
You know, we don't do marriage tax counseling either at my shop, so I can't help you there.
But the bottom line is, if you're listening right now, you're freaking out, you don't think you're going to get your taxes done, file for an extension. Do that right away.
4868, Form 4868. It's right at IRS.gov.
Elise Glink, thinkglink.com/taxes. Elise, have a great day. Thanks for coming on.
I will. Thanks, Pete. You too. All right. Andrea.
It's 720 WGN.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
710, Pete McMurray in for Steve Cochran. It was a few weeks ago when you talked to this kid that we have on the phone. When you were in high school, were you thinking about running for any type of elected office?
Like school treasurer, I think.
I ran for student council in my, what was my line? Save the whales. That was the whole deal.
That was good.
Yeah, thank you. Good. I won, and I didn't have the proper signatures, and they pulled me.
Oh, no.
Miss Curtis, still upset about that to this day. But there's a kid in Lake County.
He's a young man. I'm not sure I'd call him a kid. He's pretty mature.
Jake Leahy is on the phone with us. Jake, you're a senior in high school, and you decided to run for the school board. And they talked to you a few weeks ago. You won the election.
Yes. So thank you so much for having me on again today. So I won last Tuesday in my election, which was Bannockburn School District 106. There are four candidates on the ballot, and I ended up coming out on top as the leading vote-getter.
Well, good for you, man. So what do you do now? I mean, you win the election. Do you think do you panic at that point and think, oh, my God, what did I just do?
No, it's actually really good because now, I mean, I have an opportunity really to my main issue in the campaign was just improving communication in the district and improving transparency as well. And that's really now I have an opportunity to continue to have these conversations and the dialogue between the district and the people, the community. And so that's really what I'm doing and what I've continued to do even after the election.
Jake, what kind of reaction did you get from your classmates at Deerfield High School?
Yeah, they thought it was awesome. I mean, as I mentioned before, I mean, they all went out and voted. They all were enthusiastic about it. And it was, so many people the next day were like, oh, did you win? Or I saw you won. Congratulations. It's awesome. But, I mean, everybody was, you know, all these people were following it and trying to follow it on the county website and doing all that. So it was definitely a really a great experience and a great way to learn and to see everything that's going on for them too.
We always say, if you don't like the system, try to change it. And you're one of those guys that actually you went out and voted, but you thought, okay, I'm going to run, and you won. So congratulations, man. And I got to say one more thing. I grew up in Peoria, and there was a young congressman that started on the Peoria school board when he was 19 years old. He was one of the rising stars in Congress. And, of course, it was Aaron Schock. And we know the story. But, that's how it all starts, man. So good luck. You know, we'll check in with you and see how you're doing next fall. How about that?
Yep, absolutely. Thank you so much.
All right. Thanks, Jake.
Thanks, Jake.
What a good kid, man.
Yes.
He won it. He won a seat on the school board.
Yeah.
Which is great.
Rather decisively.
Attorney Karen Conti, usually on the phone every week, but she joins us today in studio. It's great to see you, Karen.
It's great to see you. It's nice to be here in the morning when the sun is shining. Usually I'm here in the dark.
KContiLaw.com. All right, this United Airlines incident that happened where they dragged the 69-year-old doctor off the plane. My first thought was, this guy's got $100,000 in his pocket. Easy, from United.
Easy. And when there is a fiasco like this, obviously there's the legal part of it, and then there's the publicity part of this. And in order to make it right, I would imagine that United Airlines is going to settle with him very quickly and maybe even some sort of settlement that might be confidential in nature. But, you know, there's legal again and PR. And, you know, the PR part of this was done really poorly.
Well, yesterday it came out that he's had some prior felony convictions. Will that hurt his case at all? Because it's all over.
Yes,
people are
right.
On one side or the other.
Right. It will not hurt his case. In cases like this, if there's a conviction, it probably won't come into evidence in a trial. Let's say the case went to trial. Mm-hmm. Because the judge would determine that, you know, if he committed a crime in a prior life, you know, that's not relevant to what happened here. And in fact, his credibility probably isn't much at issue because it's all on video.
Right.
So it's not a he said, she said, and we don't need to hear that he was convicted of a felony in order for the jury to say, well, I'm not sure I can believe him. So it would likely be kept out of the trial and not relevant at all. Relevant to the publicity of this, maybe a little bit, but not legally.
I mean, if you were consulting United Airlines, what would you say to them? What were you guys thinking?
Yeah.
You're dragging a passenger, bloodied passenger, off an airline.
it's really hard when you're in this situation because there are two parts of this, and you see this with celebrities. You see this with the Michael Jacksons of the world. They have to deal with the celebrity part of their trial and their legal part of their trial, and sometimes they conflict. In cases like this, with when the case might be filed in federal court, the law allows apologies to be brought into court. So if United had issued a really strong apology, like, we messed up here, we're sorry, we'll never do it again, which they really didn't do, right?
No.
They did far from
that. They didn't apologize until a day later.
It was reaccommodation and words that I don't even understand. But the idea is that if they did apologize, that could have been brought into a lawsuit to say, see, you did something wrong, you said you did something wrong, and even though you apologize, that still is relevant to your culpability. And that's why I'm sure the lawyers for the airlines were telling them, don't apologize, or give that sort of edgy apology.
Well, their first statement was, we can legally do this. We can tell a passenger to get off the flight.
Well, and that's true. I mean, now the question of, there's two questions here. You know, did the airline have a right to do what it did? I mean, generally speaking, overbooking, you can kick people off the flight. Although I don't think this was overbooking. I think this guy had his seat. It was confirmed. He was on the plane.
Yep.
Now this is what we call refusal to transport, which is a whole different thing. And I don't know that he qualifies as a person who should be refused transport. On the other hand, if he's acting unruly, the captain certainly has the authority to say, all right, unruly passengers have to leave. And you're causing a problem and we need to get somebody off the plane. And the captain controls. At that point is what kind of force is necessary. That's the key.
Karen, the fact that he initially agreed to give up his seat and then went back to it when he discovered he couldn't get home that day, does that in any way hurt his case?
It does, because he agreed and they relied on that. And so you could say that his changing his mind was not acceptable. There was already a binding agreement there from a legal standpoint. Again, the key is more the idea of, now what force do you use? Do you bring the police? These are the airport police who are trained in the academy, the Chicago Academy. The only thing they don't do is carry guns. And they're coming in here and they usually are called when there's a crime committed. Now, would you say there's a crime committed when he's refusing to get off the plane? Maybe. But the force necessary, only reasonable force necessary to get the job done. And you look at what harm could he have caused? Was he was the perpetrator, if you want to call him a perpetrator, dangerous to other people around him? And were there other means to get him off the plane? How about offering more money to other people? You know, that type of thing.
Right. Usually so, that happens.
It does happen. And you know, I've seen it go up way, you know, into the thousands.
They keep bringing it up.
They do. And they have all kinds of chits in their pocket where they can give you all kinds of restaurant vouchers and things like that. They didn't do it. And it was an avalanche of mistakes here. It started at the beginning. They should have got him off the plane, not even put him on the plane, if that was the case, got the people off before. And then, again, calling the police and having them use that force was wrong.
We're going to talk about compensation after we check traffic. How much can this guy get? And we'll run through everything. I mean, you have to talk about work. You have to talk about him being dragged, the video, and the whole deal. Karen Conti in studio with us, kcontilaw.com. Here's Mary with traffic.
Please rise. Court is now in session.
722, Pete McMurray in for Steve Cochran in studio with us, attorney Karen Conti, kcontilaw.com. We're talking about the United Airlines flight where the 69-year-old doctor was dragged from his seat down the aisle. He was bloody. Let's talk compensation. So there's a video, multiple videos of what happened. He was harmed. He missed work, and he's been in the hospital ever since.
Yeah. Well, he's going to be entitled to his medical bills, certainly, pain and suffering, if there's any permanency. For instance, if he has a lack of use of an arm or something like that impacts his work, that could be compensable. And, you know, in these kind of cases, which are civil rights violations, he would be entitled to his attorney's fees, which in litigation can be substantial, maybe even in $1 million range if it goes to trial. And then there's also punitive damages, which is that amount of money that the jury feels is reasonable to stop the airline or the police from doing what they did to him. And that's really, the sky's the limit, literally. I hate to say sky's the limit in an airline, but that's the truth. And that could be a substantial amount. My guess, though, Pete, is that this is going to be settled. I just don't see why United would put this guy through this.
No, you're absolutely right.
They want to make this go away as quickly as possible. There's going to be a settlement. Who knows what it's going to be? I would say it's probably going to be at least $500,000 or upward of that.
Okay.
And it's going to go away. I mean, that's the best
advice. And nobody
advice.
Can talk about it.
Probably not.
Yeah, we're going to give you $500,000. Just keep your mouth shut.
Yeah, I think the fact of settlement will be, they'll be able to talk about that, but not the amount and not the terms. And they're not going to set a precedent that if this happens again, that they're going to pay $1 million. They don't want to do that.
Can they offer him United Miles?
They tried, and he wouldn't get off the flight. Steve, you want to jump in?
Yeah, Karen, I just have a question because we're monitoring up here. Oscar Munoz is on ABC this morning giving a full interview about this. How careful does he have to be in what he says? Because he's saying that they're not going to use security or police to drag passengers off these planes anymore. That's sort of an admission that what happened was wrong, isn't it?
It is. And, you know, it's interesting because, like I said, in federal court, you can bring in apologies. Now, if they've changed procedures, there's some rules about that, too, because the law wants the companies to change policies if those policies are not working. So if you have a broken gate, for instance, and you fix it later, is that relevant to say that you had a broken gate before? It is, but sometimes the courts don't allow that kind of evidence in because they want to encourage people to change a bad situation. So yes, he has to be careful. But again, walking that line between PR and legal, you know, I don't think he's harming anyone by saying, no, we're not going to have the police used anymore. The police should be only used when there's a serious crime. You know, these are people who are trained in law enforcement. This is not about, you know, civil disputes. And I think when you escalate a civil dispute by bringing in people trained in criminal problems, then you're going to have a problem.
Does he have a case that since his face is all over the internet, that it hurt his business?
Sure. Although that's not always part of it. I mean, just because someone becomes, you know, well-known because of a publicized dispute doesn't, that's not something that's really compensable.
I mean, if this guy's your doctor, you just, the mental picture is with his shirt up, you see his belly button and his glasses are around his nose.
Yeah. And again, is that because of what United did, or is that because people have cell phones that take pictures? Was that because the internet published it?
Right.
So that's not really tied to the injury, but certainly he's going to make that point that now his name is mud and he's not going to get business. And of course, everyone now knows his criminal record, which is a problem for
right.
him, too.
Yeah.
There's also this, too. The LA Times this morning is reporting this happened, not this bad, but has happened other times. And they've used an investment broker that was actually threatened to put him in handcuffs to get him off the plane out of a flight out of Los Angeles. So there must be others of these cases that would now come to the surface,
well,
right?
Well, absolutely. And listen, I've represented people. I've represented at least three people in the last 10 years who have gotten feisty at the gate. I have to get somewhere and they get unruly. Maybe they've had a couple of drinks and they get arrested. They get hauled out. And especially after 9/11, there's no tolerance for that kind of stuff.
Right.
So I see that all the time. This is not an isolated incident. I mean, this one, because it was filmed, of course, gets a lot of play. But, you know, my advice to everyone is, you know, calm down. You have no control when you're flying, none at all. And even these rules that are supposed to protect you, you really don't have a right to sue under them. People call me all the time. They lost my luggage. I want to sue. You know what? You have no rights to sue. The federal government.
You can't sue over lost luggage.
Well,
don't
you
waste
can't.
Your money.
And people, and I understand that ruins your vacation. I just
right.
had that happen to me. I went to Australia and they lost my luggage for 4 or 5 days. I mean, it was a disaster, but there's nothing you can do. My advice is be firm, know what your rights are, read your contract of carriage, which is a posted on the website of the airline.
Mm-hmm.
But be nice. You know, you can get more done by being nice to these people because they're under stress, too. They're under stress because everyone flying is under stress and crying babies.
You're under stress, and this happened on Sunday, and it was probably one
yeah.
of the last flights to go out, and everybody's crabby, and they just want to get home.
That's true. And so being nice to the airline people while asserting your rights is probably the best strategy.
So your guess is probably $500,000 and it's going to go away in the next 10 days.
I think so. And I think we're going to have a change of policy, a change of training probably at people at O'Hare. I would imagine, you know, they were talking about having these people carry guns. I think that discussion is done.
Yes.
You know, I don't think that's going to help matters. And I think there's going to be a dividing line between what is a civil dispute and what is a criminal dispute.
KContiLaw.com. Karen Conti, thanks for coming
thanks,
in. It's
Pete.
Nice to see your
Good
face
to see you.
Instead
Good
of
to see
talking
you,
to you on the phone.
And
nice
I just want to mention that Mary, your producer, is wearing leggings, so she could not be flying today on United.
Yes.
I just want to tell you that.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN. I was dreaming when I wrote this.
Forgive me if it goes astray. 7:38, Pete McMurray in for Steve Cochran. Our next guest worked alongside one of the greatest performers in the history of music. It's been almost a year since Prince passed away. Joining us, Prince's keyboardist for the last 7 years and a part of the new power generation, Cassandra O'Neill. Thank you for coming in studio. We started playing the music. You're grooving a little bit, aren't you?
Yeah, that's my song. I like this song.
Can you believe it's been a year? I mean, even with this fast news cycle, news is thrown in your face 24/7. I can't believe it's been a year.
It seems like it was yesterday. Like it just happened a week ago. And it's been like that for a year, if you can imagine that.
Right.
It seems surreal. And coming upon a year, it's just like, wow, what have I been doing this last year? It's like, I talk about him all the time. I think about him all the time. But it still doesn't seem like a year.
Tell me about when you heard the news. How shocked were you?
Very shocked. It was as if it wasn't happening. I wanted to believe with everything in me that this was a joke, that it was a Facebook hoax, and that it was everything else but reality. And it was just like that for me until my keyboard tech called me and said, it's true. And I said, well, how do you know? He said, because it's on CNN. And I was like, okay. So when I turned on CNN, and the first thing I saw was him plastered all over the, the TV. And
right.
The headlines.
Breaking
and
news. Yes, yeah, at the bottom of the screen.
Right, right, right. And I'm like, okay, this is real. And again, I didn't believe it until the next day when I was doing an interview for ABC News. And I went on Facebook to thank everybody because people were, Facebooking me, DMing me, calling me, texting me, and I wasn't taking any calls because I just couldn't talk to anybody.
Right.
And so as I began to thank people, I said, and to Prince. And as soon as I said that, that's when it really hit me and I cried for the first time.
When was the last time you saw Prince?
Last time I saw him was when we did a private engagement in, where were we? St. Bart's. And that was New Year's Eve going into New Year's Day, 2015, coming into 16. And the last thing that he said to me after we kicked butt on stage, as we always did, I was walking away and, the new year had came in. We had all, said Happy New Year. I was walking away and he said, hey, Cassie. I said, yes, sir. He said, we missed you. We missed you a lot. Welcome back. And I said, thank you, sir. I looked down and smiled and looked at him and I said, I missed you too. I said, more than you know. And I blew him a kiss and I said, I love you. And he kind of did a gesture like that.
Right.
And smiled and I walked away, not knowing then that that was the last time I would see him.
Wow, man. What was Prince like? Because he was such a private person, but you hear so many stories like he made me a better musician when I played with him. He was always joking around. What was he like?
All of those things and more. The musician thing is a given. Just awesome musician, just a musician's musician. I can go on all day and get into technicalities about how intricate but yet simple he was. As a man, the funniest cat, just, always had a joke, always had a punchline. And he was so quick on his feet, we'd be having a conversation and he would just add a one-liner that would just crack us all up, and he's like, where did you just go? And so, a very, very sensitive man, very sensitive. You have to be. To be able to write music like that,
right.
Very caring, one of the most gentlemanly gentlemen I've ever met in my life. He would pull out chairs and hold your, extend his hand for steps and we want some water. You comfy? You cold? He always wanted to make you comfortable.
He could write music, he could dance, he could play music. I mean, he was just such a great performer. What was it like backstage before you guys went on stage?
Well. I'll just give you a day in the life of an MPG member. You wake up, you go to sound check, and you sound check for about 3 hours, maybe 2.5, 3 hours.
3 hours sound check?
Oh, yes.
Is Prince there the whole time?
Not the whole time. He would come in the last half of it, and that would, kind of dictate how long we're going to be there, because we would be there until he says,
three
okay.
hours? Was he a perfectionist?
Oh, my gosh, was he?
Wow.
The ultimate.
I mean, usually when bands come to town, they air check or they sound check for 20 minutes, maybe.
Oh, no. Wow. It has to be perfect. And then don't get us into a groove. And we'll stay there. We will stay right there.
Guys, you got to go shower and put on your outfits before the show.
Right. And you have a half an hour to do that. You have a half an hour to get yourself together, to get yourself made up and dressed. And then we go to his room and we, you know, make sure that everything is in place. You know, we might switch necklaces or something, or earrings with another singer or something. And, you know, everything that you saw, everything that you heard, he was in control of it. His vision, that was his vision. So we play. Like I said, after you do the half an hour thing, you play. And then... go back to the dressing room, get made up again, go to the after show, and play for another 3.5 hours.
Right. There was always an after show.
Yes, the after show.
And he was always late. I remember Prince is going to be at the House of Blues for the after show, and it's going to start at midnight, and he shows up at 2 o'clock.
Well, he needs a break after the 3-hour rehearsal and then show itself, you know, before he can get there.
Right.
Why was he always late for the after show?
I don't know. It was his show. He could come in whenever he wanted to.
He was Prince.
And right. And sometimes we would play without him and he would come in and, you know, join in. But and sometimes we'd wait. You know, it was just all a matter of what he wanted us to do.
You know, by the time you joined Prince, you were already an accomplished artist. When you join somebody of that caliber, do you... you already have your thoughts and how you like to do things and whatever. Do you let that all go and let him dictate, or was he welcome to your ideas and thoughts on how things went?
Well, I'd say it's kind of a little mix of the two. I mean, when you play for an artist, you come into it with the understanding that it's their organization and it's their music. But at the same time, like, how you govern your day to day is based on how you've done previously. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? If you know that you like to eat breakfast before sound check, you do. But you know what I'm saying? And mm-hmm. if some people don't like to eat before they sing, so they don't, you know. And so when it came to him personally, we did it his way, you know. But when it came to your day to day, you kind of work your own thing into it, and it becomes your new, if that makes any
your
sense.
Your new.
Yeah,
I like that.
New.
It does make sense. Cassandra O'Neill in studio with us. We're going to check traffic and we'll talk a little bit more about Prince coming up next.
Cool.
720 WGN, Pete McMurray and for Steve Cochran in studio with us. Prince's keyboardist for the last 7 years and a part of the new power generation, Cassandra O'Neill. It's almost been a year since Prince passed away. Paisley Park. Have you been there? I'm sure you have.
Many times.
Tell me about it.
Paisley is a magical place. It's where Prince cultivated so much music. It's a sound stage. It's a, well, they turned it into a museum now. I went once we did the Prince tribute last year, and it looks completely different. It's beautiful, but it's not the Paisley that I remember.
Did he have a room where he wrote the music? Did he just go somewhere and sit in a room?
Studio.
Really?
He had a lot of studios in there, and I think it was Studio B that he made into, like, his, you know, all his keyboards and stuff were there, and we would go in there and cut and stuff. And
how many studios?
It's quite a few. I think it's like one, two, let's see, A, B, C. I think it's A, B, C, and D, I think. I'm not sure. We only were sequestered to like one.
Sure.
Because that's where the piano was and that's where all the gear was. So, but yeah, Paisley is a magical place.
Did you ever have a sense or know that he was in so much pain or masking anything?
No. Honestly, I didn't. When you're on the road and you have a cold or something, you know, everyone knows it. You know, you have a cold, you're sniffling and stuff like that. Outside of that, I never saw him, you know, in pain. And if he were, I think for him, it was just all about the music and all about making sure that he delivered what the people wanted, because he knew that they wanted the music. And that was always the priority, you know, even with us when we were sick. You know what I'm saying? I don't know how many times I got on stage with the sniffles, or I was, you know, aching or cramps, let's just be real. And so, you know, so
I have those right now. You're right.
So yeah, you know, I didn't know.
I think our infatuation with Prince, number one, he was a great performer. We loved his music. But number two, it's because he was such a private person. We wanted more information.
Mm-hmm.
And it would just be so few and far between. And when we got a little bit of information and then we heard the news when he passed away, it's like, oh, my God, we had no idea. And then he talked about his pain, how he was been in pain for the last few years.
Mm-hmm.
No one knew.
No, I mean, I had heard about the operation, but again, he didn't. He wasn't one of those that, you know, that walked around, oh, I'm hurt. It was
right.
Never that. Never that. We were rehearsing for, you know, however many hours a day. You know, it was always, you know, this pretty much the same regime. We would come in. He would give us instructions on what he wanted us to do, what songs he wanted us to do. Then we would go eat dinner, and then we'd come back, and he'd take over, and we'd be there for however long he wanted to keep us there and play and make magic.
Let's go back to when you guys were on stage. Did he, I know you have a set list, but would he go off the set list? Would he yell at people and say, this is what we're doing?
Nope, he didn't yell. You always just knew that the set list could change. You kept your eyes and your ears on him.
Right.
You know, and that was the great thing about, you know, his gig was that it kept you sharp. Every night you
had to stay on your toes because you never knew what was going to happen.
I couldn't reach down to tie my shoe for 2 seconds because I could miss something. You know, the stuff that, you know, that you don't see, you know, us having to, you know, you might have a fly that's flying around and up your nose and whatever. And but you gotta stay in character.
Going.
Yeah. Stay
right.
In character. You might have to go to the bathroom, but you kind of muster through it and, you know, keep dancing. And but yeah, it was always different every night.
How many people in history could change their name to a symbol? Did you ask him about that?
No, because I understood it from a music point of view and an administrative music business point of view. He talked about it. That was the other thing. He was very free with the information because his whole thing is he knew, you know, it's like one day I'm not going to be here. So here you go. This is what I did, or this is what, you know, I feel like you guys should do. He always said, you know, when this is over, you guys teach, go out, give the information like I'm giving it to you, because these young kids are getting it from the wrong sources. And they're not understanding that this thing takes a whole lot more work than what they're willing to put in, thinking on what they're going to get back. You know?
Right.
Yeah. So.
Right.
So unfortunately, when something like your Prince dies, that was what you were doing at the time. So you have to do other projects. I know I saw you were on the Today Show with Leanne Rimes.
Yes.
And she's an amazing artist as well.
Yes.
Now, not everyone would draw the line from somebody who played for Prince going to Leanne Rimes. Where'd that come from?
I had met Leanne some years back, but I think it was 2006, 2007. I played on two of her albums, and I play everything. I made sure that coming up, I listened to everything. I shedded every kind of music. My parents were musicians and singers, and even though I was a pastor's daughter, they allowed me to listen to all of it, from rock to pop to jazz, to bebop, all that. So... prior to Prince, I had worked with Macy Gray, Mary J, Leanne, Pink, 98 Degrees, all these different genres. So when I got the opportunity, when she called, it was like, yeah, okay.
I'll do it.
Yeah, I'll do it. And she's great. Yeah. Get her new record, Remnants, is awesome.
I mean, you seem like a good soul and just a very positive energy when you walked in the studio and always smiling the entire time.
Thank you.
And you were in town. You were at the Old Town School of Folk in Lincoln Square
yesterday. Yes, I was there last night. I will be doing a workshop there, two clinics there in 3 weeks, the first week in May. For those that are following me on social media, there'll be links and things in Chicago. Come on out. It's free to the public. Yeah, come on.
Good for you. That's a great place, isn't it?
It is.
Old Town.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Awesome.
Cassandra O'Neill, thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
Hopefully we'll see you again soon.
Yes.
All right. Pete McMurray in for Steve Cochran. It's 720 WGN.
Ladies and gentlemen,
Dean Richards joins us from Channel 9.
Citizens of the world,
some of the world's greatest entertainers are here tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you?
And tonight, guess what? It's going to be Dean.
Yeah, Hollywood, you know I love you more than what I should. Yeah, Hollywood, well, kiss me good.
8:12, Pete McMurray in for Steve Cochran. Let's bring in Dean Richards from WGN-TV.
Pete.
Dean, let me explain to people listening right now. The WGN Morning News was live at Murphy's on Monday.
Correct.
I sent you a text during the show.
Several.
Congratulating you.
Several.
On being the only one wearing a Cubs baseball hat for the home opener. You were the only one dressed for a baseball game.
Really? I'm just saying, I'm the only one that had any Cubs stuff on.
I sent Tomasulo a text saying, did you get a bowl of soup with that shirt? He wore a pink shirt down to the ballpark.
What does that mean?
And a fresh haircut. It's like he got his haircut right before the show and went on TV.
He got a haircut because he did his big comedy benefit the Thursday before. The haircut was still fresh from then. But he did look like a little six-year-old that just got off the... You know, the little booster seat they put in the barber seat.
Right. I mean, he had a fresh
when
haircut.
Your dad takes you to get a haircut. He did look just like that. And wearing a pink shirt.
Yes,
on opening day at Murphy's.
Yep, at Murphy's.
You know what happens? You walk into Murphy's with a pink shirt on any day of the week.
I get punched in the neck.
There's nothing but trouble.
Right.
You wear a pink shirt. And the rest of them are, you know, like, oh, we're too cool to wear any
Larry
cups.
And Robin wear business casual, and then you have Paul.
Yeah, Paul had actually tennis shorts on. That surprised me. I've never seen Paul without pants before, if you'll excuse the expression.
What? Wait a second. Right. We've gone south already?
That's like Harry Carey. What do you
used
to say?
Marla Collins.
Yeah. I ever see Marla Collins for the first time without pants.
But the place was packed on Monday. You had a good time?
Yeah, it was fun. The Murphy's was packed. I'm amazed at how early in the day some people start their opening day celebrating.
Yeah.
I was out on the street. Our friends from Vienna Beef, the world's greatest hot dog, we were passing out free hot dogs at the Red Line station on Addison.
That's right.
Who doesn't want a delicious hot dog at 6 o'clock in the morning?
I'll eat it.
What was delicious? I had one.
Yeah.
What else? We went out to that new plaza, which is very cool, where the donut place used to be. That used to be a dirt lot.
Oh my God, I forgot about that donut
yum,
place.
Yum Yum Donuts.
Yum Yum. I couldn't think of the name of it. Yum Yum Donuts.
Yep. Right. I never went in that place sober.
And without pants.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, McDonald's maybe without pants across the street.
Yeah,
but so the donut
it's really, I mean, you know, I drive by there fairly often, but until you're actually on the ground and walking around, you don't realize how much that whole area.
It's wonderful.
It's completely changed.
Yeah.
7-Eleven's gone. McDonald's gone. It's like walking down Main Street USA in Disneyland now.
People are so upset about that 7-Eleven at Addison and Sheffield being gone. I mean, that was a staple for people. You forget something, you stop by 7-Eleven.
Right. Right,
but we'd be doing remotes, and I would run over during a break and grab coffee. And,
right.
Never know when you're going to want a delicious burrito, microwave burrito.
I mean, note to self, or no, someone listening right now that's building over there, you got to put the 7-Eleven back.
Yeah, I hope they bring back, in some of the new structures, I hope that some of those old staples come back again. Because now we just sound like old people.
We do, don't we?
This is not the way.
Where the hell is Yum Yum Donuts?
I went back.
7-Eleven.
That's right.
But you still got the Taco Bell, don't you?
Taco Bell is still there.
Yeah, still got that.
Taco Bell untouched by the gentrification.
That's not moving.
It was fun. It's fun. And it was a beautiful morning. That was before the monsoons came in on Monday. So it was a beautiful morning. It was everybody was in a great mood. It's a lot of fun. So, we had a good time. But please, come on, you go to the ballpark.
Wear a baseball hat.
I know the you're the news people. We can't wear anything with a logo on it. We're journalists. Come on.
Tomasulo grew up in Jersey. He doesn't know
Murphy's.
Any better.
You're at Murphy's.
Exactly.
Come on, put a hat on.
Right.
Come on.
You'll be calling his name. Oh, 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 oh. Dean Richards, the entertainment editor, Channel 972.
8:21, talking to Dean Richards from WGN-TV Morning News. Dean, who died? What I miss?
The founder of the legendary Jay Giles Band. Number one, John Warren Giles, was found dead in his home in Massachusetts yesterday. Friends, family hadn't seen him for a while. They called police for a well-being check. And they showed up. They found him dead. The preliminary investigations there are indicating that he died of natural causes. No foul play is expected in this. But if you go back, Jake Isles Band, 1970s, 1980s, one hit after another. Like
Musta Got Lost.
Musta Got
Centerfold,
Lost.
Centerfold.
Freeze Frame.
Freeze Frame.
Love Stinks.
Sure.
Ain't Nothing But a House Party was one of my favorite. I don't think that was a big hit song, but they had, you know, that was, you know, 70s, 80s is also when, you know, like album rock.
Yeah.
Was really popular. So, you know, when you go to your subversive FM stations, you'd be able to hear
Reputed the Buddha.
You know, the some of the cool album cuts. I had all their 8 tracks back in the day.
Where the 8-track would switch halfway through the song.
Halfway through the song was my favorite part of the whole thing. But he was 71 years old.
Now, Jay Giles is the guitarist. Peter Wolf was the lead singer who was living.
Yes.
Peter Wolf spends a lot of time in Chicago.
Alive and well. And last night tweeted Peter Wolf, thinking of all the times that we kicked it high and rocked down the house. Rest in peace, Jay Giles, he said. I wonder what he meant by kicked it high.
Well, I don't think they liked each other.
Really?
The last few years. Yeah.
Sounds like, I mean, that's a nice...
It's nice.
...tweet.
Right.
That's what I'm going to write when... I don't want to say when you die, but I'm going to write something nice like that.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Thanks for acknowledging I wore a Cubs hat on opening day.
Yeah.
And then rocked down the house.
Thank you, Pete. Rock down the house.
Thanks, Pete. Rock down the house.
Who else has died?
So he passed away, and this one really touched me when I saw this last night. David Letterman's mom passed away last night.
Oh.
Dorothy.
Sure.
Mengering was actually her last name. She got married after Dave's birth father passed away. Heart trouble, as David Letterman also had a heart trouble. But she got married, so that's why she has a different last name. But, you know, really became famous because of her regular appearances on the late night show, most often seen on satellite from the kitchen of her home in Carmel, Indiana. And I think that's right out of Indianapolis, right? Not 100% sure, but I'm pretty sure that's just right outside of the Indianapolis area. She would make pies. They would have her doing the most outrageous and ridiculous things that only an 80 or 90 year old person
loved
could get away with.
Loved it.
Reported from the Olympics several times, interviewing anyone, and just seemed like the sweetest, most lovely, and certainly most patient and tolerant mother in the world.
Well, it humanized David Letterman. Here's his mom on the show, you know, once a month.
Yeah, you could see the, you know, as kind of the wisecracker, mischievous, guy that he was. Clearly, lots of love for his mom. So our condolences to Dave and the whole family there on what certainly seems like a life well spent. So
right.
Dave's mom also passed away.
Michael Bublé talking about his son's cancer for the very first time.
Yeah, it was, I want to say maybe 6-9 months ago, something like that, that we first got the news that Michael Bublé was stepping aside from the spotlight.
Who was such a likable, nice guy.
Yeah, I'm sure still is. But I really admire this, that he stepped away from everything in order to deal with this liver cancer that his 3-year-old son was diagnosed with. His wife, who is an Argentinian actress, both put their careers completely on hold to deal with this, went through all the treatments in Los Angeles, and really didn't say anything about anything. They dealt strictly with their son's health. Yesterday was the first time that Bublé's wife, Luciana, first talked about it. And she said that he's doing well, still has a long road ahead of him, but he's happy. They are looking forward to seeing little Noah grow up, be happy. She now values life much more. And she'd been in the middle of making a movie when all of this happened. And she said that as the treatment went on and things are going well, she went ahead and finished this movie. That's why she was speaking at a press conference yesterday and talked about this. Bublé, though, stepped away from performance in this whole thing.
I can't imagine.
Priorities. I think that's just amazing. It would be easy to have an assistant you know, or, you know, somebody else take care of it. Priorities, mom and dad are there for the three-year-old, as it should be.
He seems like that type of guy.
Yeah.
Family first.
Nice guy, yeah.
Really? Well, good to know.
Yeah.
And this Mel B thing that's been all over the news, she's going through a very bitter divorce. And I read the other day that Simon Cowell counseled her. Did you see that?
To
leave her husband?
Yeah, to separate. Because apparently, you know, by her reports, there's been domestic violence. There has been, threats of photographs that he forced her to participate in with other people, sex tapes and so forth. And now she claims, extorting her that he's going to make these public if he doesn't get that. And if he doesn't get that, the latest on this whole thing came yesterday when Mel B, the former Spice Girl, got a restraining order against their nanny, claiming that she is having sex with the husband.
What?
And is pregnant with his child.
So, oh, jeez.
So restraining order now, not only to keep the nanny 100 yards clear, but also not to remove any property from a storage locker that she has. Melby's lawyer is contending that that's where the tapes, the photographs, all the things that the husband has threatened to make public to destroy her career are being kept. So this is, right?
I understand if you live downtown in a studio apartment in Chicago and you need storage, but if you live in L.A. and you're making millions as a judge on America's Got Talent, why do you need a storage locker?
Well, it's not her with the storage locker. She's claiming that it's the husband who has the husband and the nanny. That's where they're keeping their blackmail stuff. That's, you know, what she alleges to be
the sex tape.
Blackmail stuff, yeah.
Interesting.
Where do you keep your tapes?
You know, I used to have a storage locker I'd visit once in a while at Chicago and Orleans, you know, that cold storage over there.
Yeah.
Now it's gone.
The tapes are gone?
Everything's gone.
Oh, well, that's probably.
Once you get married, you got to throw everything in the garbage.
That's not a bad idea.
Because your wife doesn't want to see it anyway.
That's, you know.
Right.
I can only imagine what must be in some of those storage lockers.
Oh, man.
That would be a good television story. I'm going to start working on that.
No.
Inside the Storage Locker with Dean Richards.
Dean, I'm glad we got to talk to you today.
I am happy to talk to you. I always smile when I get a text from you, which is really like 7-8 times a day now. And believe me, he's back down. It used to be like 10, 12, 20 times a day. Hey, it's Pete.
You were talking about Sunday morning. You were talking about doing a live show from Maxwell Street on a Sunday morning.
How fun would that be?
I don't know if I sent the text on my way to church or not, but I said, I'm in 100% and I'm going to buy tube socks.
Right. All right. I really am. We've been trying to set this up.
I'm in.
The management at WGN is so busy. That, you know, apparently I'm sure my Dean's show at Maxwell Street's a huge priority for them, but you know, they've had some other things. They got the big Walk of Fame thing that's coming up soon.
Never heard of it.
So I'm sure we're going to get that done. And when we are, I would love to have you join us. Tube socks and all. I plan on buying as many hubcaps as possible.
And a bone-in pork chop sandwich on white bread. That's what they sell down there.
Getting indigestion already.
Dean Richards. Thank you, Dean.
See you, Pete.
All right, it's 720 WGN.
Let's go.
3, 2, 1.
The Steve Cochran Show presents Breakfast with a Blackhawk, sponsored by MB Financial Bank. MB means business.
Pete McMurray in for Steve Cochran. Breakfast with a Blackhawk, powered by MB Financial Bank. I love when this happens. A local kid playing for his hometown team. The Blackhawks are inviting fans to participate in their Beardathon alongside Andrew Desjardins. And this man on the phone with us is Ryan Hartman. Good morning, buddy. How you doing?
Good. How you doing?
How many tickets do you need for your family for Thursday night? Everybody hitting you up?
Yeah, definitely a good amount. It's tough to try to get everybody, but I think I did a pretty decent job.
I mean, you grew up in West Dundee, right?
Yeah, not too far down the road.
I mean, you figure that, you got to take care of your siblings, parents, you got your friends, of course, the neighbors that you grew up with. You went to high school with some buddies you got to take care of. That's a lot of tickets. Do you hit up other players?
Yeah. No, I think, everyone, I think predicted this pretty early, so there's been people that have gotten some tickets ahead of time, and no, I think there's a good crowd that'll be there.
9 years in a row, the Blackhawks in the playoffs, and the last two times the Hawks played the Predators in the first round, they won the Stanley Cup, but no pressure this year.
No, no pressure. I mean, we're taking it one game at a time and one series at a time, and can't really get ahead of ourselves. So, you know, Nashville's a good team, and, you know, we're going to go into battle on Thursday. But, you know, I think everyone's ready to go. Everyone's excited for, you know, kind of a new chapter. You know, the regular season's over, so it doesn't really matter what we did. It's a new season.
Ryan, what's this like for you? You've played a handful of games the last couple of years, but first time in the playoffs. What have you been thinking about this? What have you been told to expect? Do you anticipate it being a lot different than playing a regular season game?
Yeah, just from watching. I mean, you know, I've watched the NHL playoffs for a while now, and hearing it from the guys and the compete level and the speed of the game seems like it picks up. And you know, there's a lot riding on the line, obviously, a lot more than, you know, maybe sometimes a mid-season, regular season game. So, yeah, I'm excited. It's going to be a grind, but it's going to be fun. That's when the fun hockey starts, so I'm really looking forward to it.
God, I love it. I mean, it's expected now that the Blackhawks are going to be in the playoffs, and I feel like a lot of us assume you're just going to get through the first round, but you guys always seem to make it interesting. But you know, you as a young guy, you probably looked to Taves and Kaner and the Hossa and the veterans that have been there to kind of give you some pointers. Are you doing that?
For sure. I mean, you know, these guys they've been around for a while now, and, you know, they've been through some very positive playoff experiences and some probably not so good. And, you know, having both those kind of life experiences and knowing what it's like to be on both sides of it, I think it's good for, you know, knowing what to be in, you know, different situations and helping guys out that you really haven't been there before. So I think they do a pretty good job of that.
Well, for you personally, I'm sure this thought has crossed your mind. The last time the Nashville Predators came to the United Center, it was a pretty big night for you. First career hat trick. And, you know, I remember it being sort of it's a hat trick, goes down in the books as a hat trick. What, two empty netters?
Yeah, and one off my body, yeah.
Yeah, off your hip. Yeah.
Hey, man, we'll take it.
Yeah, I guess I shouldn't have even brought that
one for sure. But you know, like people say, they don't ask how. So it was a cool night for sure.
Well, I mean, when you look back at your stats, it's not going to say two empty netters and one off your body. It's going to say a hat trick.
A hat trick. That's
so,
right.
So that looks
exactly.
That looks good. What do you do before a game? Are you a superstitious guy, especially around the playoffs? People get very, very strange. Do you have a routine that you go through? Are you superstitious?
I wouldn't say I'm really superstitious. I think it's more, like you said, a routine. Like it's, you know, something to, it's kind of a 2-3 hour process. I mean, kind of right after pregame day, you're kind of getting your routine and try to keep it really similar. So, you know, get your body ready and, you know, you get a clear mind going into games. And I think when you keep on the schedule and the same routine, it helps with your consistency. And, you know, you're a professional, so it's, you know, it's kind of your job. So you got to prepare your body and your mind sometimes for the game pretty early in the day.
Do you eat before a game?
I do, yeah, around 12:30, and then another snack at like 3:30.
12:30, 3:30, and then probably have dinner after the game, right?
Yeah, for the most part. You know, sometimes you don't really feel too hungry after games. Sometimes it takes a while for you to feel hungry, but you got to try to get something in your body afterwards.
Do you have a regular meal at 12:30? What's a snack at 3:30?
The snack is actually, it's a baked potato, as weird as that sounds.
What do you put on it? Just a carb up?
It's pretty plain. Salt, maybe a little salt, but just bake up a potato at 3 o'clock and eat it around, or 2:30 and eat it around 3:30.
Look at that. I feel like I need to eat a potato now.
Yeah, I was going to say, let's go get a couple potatoes.
I mean, you know, a Ryan Hartman kind of looks like a young Pete McMurray. I don't know if you've seen his picture.
Yeah, well, I have.
You know, we kind of have that look. Breakfast with the Blackhawk. Ryan, we have a question from listener Mark Papzika. Here is the question. If you could have one superpower, what would it be?
Oh, that's a tough one. I'd say flying. I think that'd be pretty cool.
Like Superman, right? Yeah, I'm with you.
Yeah, you know, see everything from a different perspective. You know, you're flying over the city, and you can do a lot of things. So I think that'd be pretty cool.
And you're leading the beardathon. How's the beard? Has it started?
I just shaved. I had a little going, a little preview, I guess you can say, going, and I shaved it down yesterday, so it's starting now. I don't know how good it's going to be. It might be a little blotchy in places, but I'm looking forward to growing it out a little bit.
If people want to participate, they can go to beardathon.com/Blackhawks, and everybody can grow a beard along with the Blackhawks for the playoffs. And Kaner said this year, he usually, in the past, he couldn't grow a beard on his face because he was too young and there was no facial hair, and he has a mullet.
It's a mullet.
And he said this year he's too old for the mullet. There's not going to be a mullet this year.
Yeah, I remember when I was growing up here seeing, you know, everyone was loving the mullet.
I bet he loves hearing that.
Yeah, that's going to be great.
When I was growing up here, everyone loved the mullet.
From what I heard, I think he's keeping the hair pretty normal for this year.
But, nice.
Not a bad thing.
Well, good luck, man. We'll all be listening and watching tomorrow night. First game, first round of the playoffs. Thank you, Ryan.
All right, guys. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Ryan.
See you, man. Ryan Hartman.
So I've started my playoff beard.
You started on New Year's Day. That doesn't count. You got to shave it and start it up.
Do I? I have to start over? Is that the official rules?
Well, he shaved today. Here's the thing. How old is Ryan Hartman? 2021? Right?
Yeah.
Because you always think about Taves and Kane being young, but how old's Taves now? He's 29?
Yeah, well, but you look at Hartman's not alone on this team.
Right.
I mean, you look at Hayden, Schmaltz, Carroll,
Schmaltz.
All these
sure.
guys. They got, you know, Vinny Hinostroza's been part of it off and on. So,
right.
Yeah, I mean, you got a bunch of young guys.
Good.
I mean, yeah, they're really good. And it's been a while since you had this influx of real young first and second year guys.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of all coming onto the scene at once with this team, which makes it, I think, really interesting to see what they can do here in the postseason.
And a kid that grew up in West Dundee, and that's the beauty of Stan Bowman, keeps finding these kids that are very young, and they produce right away.
Vinny Hinostroza, another local guy.
9 years in a row in the playoffs. Last two times, the Hawks played the Predators in the first round, Stanley Cups. That's pretty impressive. Tomorrow night, you can hear it right here with John Weideman and Troy Murray on 720 WGN. Tonight, the Cubs get their rings. I'm going to the game, and the ring ceremony is at what time?
6:30.
I mentioned to my wife last night, who is always cold. My wife, Sarah, always cold. I said, Sarah, when we go skiing, you put the Under Armour on underneath your ski suit. Why don't you wear Under Armour underneath your jeans?
Oh.
Why are you giving me that look?
Because that's not comfortable.
Under Armour underneath your jeans. No. And she said, no.
You feel thick. No, that's not.
Oh, my God. That's exactly what she said. Yeah. I would feel way too thick. I don't want to look thick for the game.
You can wear some leggings. Those are all right.
How about tights? Can she do
tights,
that?
Tights are better.
Under your jeans? Yeah. Nothing under jeans feels good ever, except for me anyway.
No. I want her to last.
So 6 o'clock temperature, 47 degrees.
47 degrees.
But clear skies.
In her
mind,
it's 25. So
yeah,
she's got to bundle up.
That's too cold. I would not be going to that game myself. I can only go 70 plus. That's my temperature.
70? When's it ever 70 except in like July?
You can never go to a Bear game.
Oh, no. I only can go to Bear games if they're in San Diego or Tampa Bay or something.
Chicago is all about layering. There's no such thing as being cold. You just need the layer.
Yeah.
This is what I tried to explain to my wife. Just layer it up.
No, I want to just wear one jacket or one cute sweater or something. I don't want to put on things. I'm not wearing any kind of scarf or headgear or gloves at a game. What fun is that? I can be on my couch in my pajamas.
God, women. It just drives me crazy. Drives me nuts. I feel like I'm having a conversation with my wife right now.
This is coming from somebody who wears like loudmouth pants and a leprechaun suit.
Well, you
got
to stand out. Absolutely. Everybody needs a leprechaun suit.
Pete, I would layer up. I'd layer up to go.
Layer it up. There you go, Mayor.
I'm there.
Right.
I lived in Wisconsin for many years. You know, I'm ready.
My wife's from Wisconsin.
Wow.
I don't want to look too thick.
Yeah. Hey, I understand. But Mary, you can't look thick. You could wear something under your pants and you wouldn't even look thick.
Oh,
come on. It just depends on your body.
Can I bring a blanket?
Plus, my jeans are all too tight. I don't even think I could fit a pair of pants underneath.
You can bring a blanket into the game,
blankets,
right?
Oh, yeah, blankets. Can you bring a blanket?
Okay, I didn't know how it went.
I think you can.
Yeah. All right, maybe do a little making out in between innings.
That's, send you're Charlie. With your son. That's gross.
Charlie, go get me two beers and two dogs.
He can't get you beers, Pete.
Everybody gets served at Wrigley. It's not a big deal.
You're going to have to wash the blanket then because it's like out in public.
What? What do you mean?
If you bring a blanket to the game.
Are you a germaphobe?
Well, I know I'm clean. I don't know if that's constituted germaphobe. You bring a blanket outside the house and you bring it back in, you're going to have to wash it.
We have an outdoor blanket.
Peanut shells on it.
Right. We have an outdoor blanket. I don't think it's ever been washed.
I mean, I even just...
It's in my trunk.
When I'm going to Wrigley, like the shoes I wear, I have to think twice about what shoes. Because I feel like people step on your feet there and there's always like puddles of beer and it's just like
yucky. We're done with this conversation. We're going to be joined by CLTV. Billy Deck in the house. We'll find out what he's doing coming up after 9 o'clock at 720 WGN.
This is the Steve Cochran Show, live from the Allstate Showcase Studio on Chicago's very own
720 WGN.
720 WGN, Pete McMurray in the Allstate Showcase Studios in for Steve Cochran. We're live on CLTV. Our next guest, he is a Chicago guy, the owner of Sunda Sushi, Rocket Bar and Grill. He's an actor. He does tons of charity work, member of Looking Glass Theater, and a husband and father. It's our old buddy, Billy Deck. It is so great to see you.
You know what?
It's so great to see you because all I do is, you know, there's certain people in my life that I like to stay connected to, and you're a guy, but we only text each other. We never talk.
We've actually been connected for at least over a decade, I would say. That's
easily.
A long time. That's
easily.
A long time.
Your roommate in college was a guy I grew up with, John Hayes.
Are you kidding?
I grew up in Peoria.
He was top bunk. I was bottom bunk.
Right. Yes.
That's a lot of information.
But I remember back.
By the way, adults in bunk beds in college. That just happened. I just said that.
Yes. That happened.
And I don't know what's cooler, top bunk or bottom bunk. But I said bottom bunk.
I knew you when you were a promoter.
I was. That's how I started. I was a bouncer slash promoter because you can't be a medium to small size bouncer and not put promoter after it because it'll be like, come on,
but
come on.
That's where we originally met. And it's fun to, you know, you become friends with somebody and you see them grow. And, you know, I was at your wedding and now you have a kid. We're all grown up. We have kids now.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, at least, we're kind of grown up.
We got to teach them lessons on how to be grownups.
Right.
That's our job now.
You're a role model now. You have a 5-year-old. I have an 11-year-old who understands everything and listens to everything.
Yeah. Yeah. Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
It only gets
Are you
worse.
A different person at home or are you?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yes. Definitely. Me too. I go by William at home. Or sir.
Well, I want to get serious for a second. I want to talk about your campaign that you have going on right now, and then we'll get to the other stuff. Can you tell people about this?
Yes. There's a campaign that my buddy David Schwimmer, who is one of the founders of
David
Looking
who?
Glass. David Schwimmer.
Never heard of him.
He was on this show called Friends. Mm-hmm. And he actually was one of the founders of Looking Glass Theater, which is a theater company right down the street here on Michigan Avenue. I'm not actually a member. I'm on the board. But I did start the junior board, which you were a huge supporter of when we first started.
And then it fell off, apparently.
I didn't mean when
we first
started.
We're all busy.
I didn't mean it wasn't an age thing. It was junior board back when it first was launched.
Yes.
Yeah, and he was helping me. I'm producing a movie here called Bury the Lead with a new company I started called Elson Films to bring movies here to Chicago.
Right.
And I would call him 24/7 with questions because he's done it successfully before and I have not. And I'm really good at admitting when I'm bad at things. So I would ask him a bunch of questions. And in that, he started asking me questions about a campaign he really wanted to launch called That's Harassment. And it was about sexual harassment because there's no real face or understanding of exactly what that is to the masses. You know what sexual abuse or sexual violence is? Which, by the way, April's Prevention and Awareness Month for sexual abuse. So we launched this campaign of 6 videos with a bunch of actors that came together to spread awareness about sexual harassment. It's called That's Harassment. Hashtag That's Harassment. You can get it on Facebook/That's Harassment. And they're getting humongous response. They're getting shared virally all over because people are starting to talk about those situations that occurred in their lives or their family's lives where they had no one to talk to or they didn't even know it was harassment.
Right.
And so it's been a really interesting and helpful campaign because people are starting to come out of the woodwork and say, oh my God, That's happened to me too. And they're finally able to talk about
raising awareness. And you got some celebrities to help you with these videos.
Yeah. There's Emmy Ross, a lot of Chicago actors too, like Joe Sikora, Harry Lennox, but different actors from different shows that are really popular right now all came out to support. And they too had their own personal issues and problems and instances that occurred in their lives around harassment. And it's just really fascinating to watch. They're well written and directed. If you watch them, you'll kind of feel uncomfortable and you'll want to share them. And that's really what has made them so successful for everyone.
What are people going to learn? That if sexual harassment is in the workplace, of course, we talk about it, but people don't really... I mean, we talk about it now, but people don't talk about it in real life.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
I've been doing a lot of work around bullying prevention for the last 3 years. And I was appointed to the White House Bullying Prevention Task Force that sent us around to different cities talking to kids of all different ages to figure out what bullying is in 2017 and 18. And that's the thing. It doesn't really always look the same. But one thing that is the same and happened to be the same in this case with harassment is that it's usually stemming from an imbalance of power and abuse of that power. Mm-hmm. And that's the really interesting sort of thread that runs through all of it. That's what people will learn. And with that imbalance of power, there are people around like us who have to speak up to help the person who has no way out, who has the smaller amount of power.
Well, right. People always think of these cases in bullying and harassment of the extreme situations where daily somebody was, you know, hammered and, you know, it was awful. But there's a lot of regular everyday interaction harassment that happens that should be eliminated.
Yeah, that's what happens with these videos because they go, is that harassment? I don't know. And actually the women are speaking up a lot and the guys are kind of getting quiet and going, if I haven't been a part of that, I've seen it a lot. And now that I see it happening,
it's like this
I should
is
probably
unacceptable.
Like,
you should
reel
say
it
something.
Back a bit. Yeah, or just talk about it.
I mean, Steve Cochran has said he's wanted to host a panel for women working and talking about harassment. And we've talked about it. And I said, if I'm going to sit on that panel, I'm going to have to say here at our workplace,
this
things
happens.
Get said to me daily. And he said, geez, I thought because you were really good friends with them that you're comfortable with that. And that's the line that it's like.
And in those scenarios, there's an imbalance of power. If you don't want that sort of conversation to happen, you don't have the power to actually stop it.
Right.
And it happens in restaurants. It happens in the kitchens quite a bit.
Right.
It happens in operating rooms a lot, you know, amongst doctors. And it happens everywhere. I mean, if you just think about the way in which we've evolved over the course of, you know, 20 years ago compared to 20 years from now, it'll be extremely different.
Having a wife in the workforce and four sisters that work, the stories you wouldn't believe the things that come out of people's mouths.
Yeah, and that's...
It's ridiculous.
David actually was in that position where his mom and his sister actually had things happen to him that he didn't know about until the videos came out. And
really?
It was crushing. It was absolutely crushing. And yeah, same. I mean, anyone with a sister, a daughter, a mom that,
right.
You know.
My mother, 83 years old, she still works. I forgot about her.
You should send them the videos and they'll freak out. And they'll send them to all their friends and they'll have a platform to speak to each other. And there's all kinds of helplines on it as well. So it's Facebook. That's harassment.
And can I say something about Schwimmer? Here's a guy that doesn't need to come back to Chicago and do anything. He can just sit in L.A. and count his money. He continually comes back here and works with the arts, the Looking Glass Theater.
He just spent the last month here putting up a new play that just went up at Looking Glass. So if you get a chance, you know, check it out. It's something that he brought over from London. So that is to Chicago.
And the thing is with Schwimmer, and you've brought him in a half a dozen times. When he sits down, you feel like he hates your guts. And then you start talking to him and he warms up and suddenly he's your best friend.
Why do you think he hates your guts?
I don't know. He kind of gives you that look. It's like, I kind of remember this guy. I don't know if I should like him.
He might actually hate your guts though, Pete, I think.
But he's a good dude.
He's a great guy.
Which I like.
Good Chicago guy.
All right. Mary wants to bring up something that she watched last night.
I do. Talk about somebody who's everywhere and you can't get away from him. Billy Deck is one of them. We're watching the ESPN series We the Fan for the Section 250 Bear fans of Soldier Field. And in the second episode, they say we're going to have Billy Deck explain what PSLs are.
I'm so upset about this.
Why?
I've been a Bear season ticket holder forever in Section 251. This is section 250. How what? Do they not call me?
Well, didn't you hear season two? It's 251. You
should. I just been around the stadium.
The show, yeah.
Oh, man.
That would be good. Yeah, you would have been better at that role than myself. I was.
And he didn't go to Harvard, so that's probably why they changed.
My brother
you, right?
Ed has a tailgate every home game in the South Lot. He's done it forever, and everybody shows up, and it's the same thing every week. I mean,
you know, I knew
brother
that
Ed's a super fan.
The level of I mean, listen, for people to actually deal with that cold in the stands, but to also spend, hey, let's do an extra 3 or 4 hours before the game. That's amazing to me.
Yes,
I you know,
that's
I give you
half
a lot of credit.
The fun, man.
Is it? Is it really that fun?
It is. Because
what's
you're
more fun, that
out?
Or like being in under the covers on the couch with like a slab of ribs?
When you're hanging
I'm
out
in some lounge in pants.
When you're hanging out in the bitter cold and someone's cooking it on a grill and your brothers are there and your friends and you're just laughing and you know you're going to see your beloved Chicago Bears, I love that.
But how many times do you go, wow, that it's cold? I mean, it's really
a lot. But you got to layer. You got to know how to layer.
We just discussed layering. Not everyone's into that. I'm not.
If you're layering, you're good.
Layering, you can't live in Chicago if you don't layer.
Yeah, right.
No. Yeah.
Mary hates the layer.
They're talking about layering going to the Cub game tonight. I'm sorry, if I'm not going to a baseball game, if I have to put layers on. Like, that's not fun to me.
The only layers I want to be putting on in a Cubs game is like sun.
You're
like,
on.
Yeah, exactly.
Billy, you're on next week's episode? Is that right?
Of ESPN?
Yes.
No, he was on last night.
Oh, you were on last night.
They aired two episodes.
I have it
episodes.
On DVR. I haven't seen it yet.
I haven't seen it yet either, so can you explain PSLs?
Spoiler alert.
No, you really want to see
the Bears a lot of money so you can sit in a seat.
Yeah, you really want to see the amazing explanation I give.
He used a good analogy with wristbands at his nightclubs. It was good.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I got it on DVR. I'm going to watch it.
You should, and then explain
the PSL,
it to me.
Too.
And that'll come in handy when you interview Billy next week on a different show.
Yes. I'm glad you saw that. I'm glad that came out. I looked at my Twitter and text, and people were sending it from it's national, by the way.
Yeah, it's a
someone sent it
show.
To me from Nashville. Someone sent it from
ESPN.
LA.
Yeah, right.
That's awesome. I didn't know how. It was extremely popular.
And I do want to mention one more thing. I was running on the treadmill about 3 weeks ago, and I look up at the TV, and there you are on the Today Show with waffles.
Yeah. You know,
I'm like, really?
Yeah, that gives you a lot of incentive to just work a little harder on the treadmill so you can make the waffles that I make. They're rocket brunch waffles that I make on the Today Show.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've been doing it for like 3 years, still making food.
I feel like you're on the Today Show at least twice a year, sometimes three times a year.
Oh, sometimes 10
wrong?
Or 11, 12 once.
Are you on at least once a quarter?
Yeah, at least. Yeah, absolutely. Making food.
Good for you.
And just telling stories about Chicago places.
Okay. Well, you're a good Chicago guy, a good representation of the city and the campaign to fight sexual harassment. Where can they find it on Facebook again?
Facebook, That's Harassment, or hashtag That's Harassment.
Right.
You'll be able to get to it all over.
And they can type in your name, Billy Deck, and they'll find it. DEC.
DEC. And also, I post it all the time on my handles. But you go to the Facebook page and leave a comment about it, and at least bare minimum, look at one of the videos and share the six with your, like the woman or girl in your life that
you're right.
just want to have some awareness. I promise you, you will not regret it.
It's good to see you, man.
Awesome seeing you in the world's greatest office here on Michigan Avenue, WGN Radio.
It's 720 WGN.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
She moved in. I lose the thermostat battles too. That's it, the thermostat. She always got it on 80, and you just go back and forth. And that's when you realize that your parents lied to you. Your parents lied to us. When they told us what we need to look for in a mate, they gave us the wrong list. That list was horrible. Find someone that respects you and who has ambition, and watch how they treat a waitress, because how they treat a waitress. No. Find you somebody you thermostatically compatible with. That's what you need. Thermostatic compatibility should be above religion. A Catholic can date a Christian, but an 82 can't date a 67. Are you crazy? Put it at the top of your list.
Let's bring in the very funny Roy Wood Jr., who's appearing at Talia Hall in Pilsen this coming Saturday. Roy, how are you, man?
I'm just relaxing in my baby blue Chevy Impala. Like a G.
Blue Thunder!
What's going on with y'all?
I had your good friend Steve Byrne on last week.
Byrne is a bad influence. Byrne is the reason why I'm trying to lose weight now. I don't know what it is with his metabolism, but he's got like that super duper. I don't even know if it's all Asians or if it's just him. It might be his Irish side, but anyway, he can eat 9 hot dogs and not feel it. I look at a hot dog and I just get the itis, and I go to sleep while I'm in line.
Don't you hate people like that? My sister Mary is like that. She can eat anything, anytime. She never gains weight. She can still fit into her prom dress. That was the big family joke last year.
Dude, I look at pictures of myself from prom, and I'm like, I don't even recognize that guy. Like, you see me now, and you see a picture of me from back when I was at prom, and you just think I survived some horrible stomach illness. It's like, oh, my God, were you near death? Look how skinny you were.
Don't you hate when you look back at pictures and say to yourself, God, I was so much more better looking and in better shape years ago. What happened to me?
You know what's funny, though? If I could go back and talk to myself, fitness wouldn't be the one sentence. Like, if I had one sentence to just give back to myself, it would just be, hey, man, learn how to play second base. Because eventually the Cubs will win it all.
Mm-hmm. Right. Eventually.
And then I would fight out Javi Baez in a position battle in spring training, and Joe Maddon would award it to me because I don't eat 9 hot dogs at a time.
Well, you grew up in the South, and you now live in L.A., I'm assuming, right? Do you live out west?
New York now with the Daily Show and all of that stuff, but
okay.
L.A. for like 7 years.
So you as a sports fan, when the Cubs won the World Series, that was a big deal, right?
I was there. I was there at Game 7.
What?
Wearing a robe, a Chicago Cubs bathrobe.
You were in Cleveland?
In Cleveland for Game 7 on a work night. Trevor Noah gave me permission. Somewhere on my Twitter page on the homepage there, like a couple scrolls down, it should be a picture of me that ESPN put up the other night of me in the victory robe. It was amazing. But what I discovered is that I'm a first-generation Cubs fan, which is a totally different set of stakes. It's way lower. Like, when you're the first one in your family to like the Cubs, nobody cares. But when you start hearing stories of people who were like, yeah, my dad brought me to the games, and then my granddad and his great-great-granddad.
Oh, yeah.
I drove to the grave and listened to it on the radio. I was alone. I had nobody to hug. It was a very lonely experience. I left early.
People don't care about first-generation Cub fans. No.
Yeah, there's just no connection to the franchise. And now when my son is born, I don't even get to pass on misery to him.
No. I mean, my son's 11. He's seen the Blackhawks win 3 times. The White Sox won the year he was born, and now the Cubs won.
And now Jay Cutler is gone. For your son.
But
yes, my kid's 11 months old. I'm raising him up to be a Miami Dolphins fan, so I'm hoping he'll get his misery there and grow up to be a nice, balanced individual.
And I feel like you spend a lot of time in this city. How often do you come back to Chicago? Well, now that you're doing The Daily Show, I guess you don't since you're in New York, but it seems like you come back here a lot.
I started comedy in 98. Chicago's been a staple of my comedy diet ever since. It's, you know, it's a great place to come and tell a joke because everybody there is intelligent. They know what's going on. They're very aware of the world. But trust me, there are some places that are not aware of the world.
Roy Wood Jr., Talia Hall in Pilsen. Roy, great to talk to you. For tickets, where can people go?
Just go to the Talia Hall website. I'm sure they got a link set up over there where you can buy tickets, and it's one show at 9 o'clock, so you'll have to choose which woman you come with. Normally there's 2 shows, so you can bring both of your chicks.
That's nice.
Sorry about that, fella.
Thank you, Roy. Good talking to you.
Appreciate it.
All right, it's 9:31. The big story next on 720 WGN.
The Steve Cochran Show.
Boyle means business. Comcast Sportsnet.
WGN, Pete McMurray in the Allstate Showcase Studios in for Steve Cochran. 9:44, the Blackhawks start the playoffs tomorrow night as the host, the Nashville Predators. When I think of a guest that is so difficult to get on this show, it's our next guest. The Blackhawks playoff preview tonight on Comcast Sportsnet. I'd like to welcome to the show, Pat Boyle. How you doing, buddy?
I'm good, Pete. How you doing?
Well, this was a tough booking. Well, I know you're busy, man. I appreciate you taking the time out. How were you contacted yesterday? Was it Mike Jacobson to get a hold of you?
Yeah. I don't know how you guys got my number, but I was bumped last segment, so clearly I didn't have much cloud in that room.
Does your wife call you and say, sorry, honey, we got to bump you. We got to move you.
basically, the story of my life. She says that quite a bit around the house, so I'm used to being bumped.
Well, before we start making fun of Mary, what are we going to see tonight? Blackhawks preview. What do we need to know?
We need to know that I think the best postseason in all professional sports is kicking off tonight, and for the Hawks, it's tomorrow night. We may love the Bears, we may love hoops, but for my money, the Stanley Cup playoffs are the best thing going. And we have a team that is in the midst of an epic run here. They've certainly entered the status of being a dynasty, and they've got a very tough first-round opponent. I think a lot of people think that, well, they beat him in 2010, they beat him in 2015, they went on to win the Cup both of those years. Nashville was tough outs both times, and I don't think this is going to be any different. So it should be a great series, and we're just looking forward to seeing how these young guys perform. And you had Ryan Hartman on earlier in the show. I think it's you know, for eight guys on this team or seven guys on this team, they've never tasted the speed, the intensity, the grueling nature of the Stanley Cup playoffs. They're going to find out exactly what it's like tomorrow night.
This segment sponsored by Chicago's own Nuveen. Pat, you mentioned the previous playoff meetings with Nashville. Do you ever wonder how different Blackhawks history might be if it were not for that goal by Marian Hossa in that game at the United Center where they're about to go down 3-1 to the Predators? And after that, everything, really since that point, everything has changed for the Blackhawks.
Dave, I completely agree with you. I think, first of all, you go back to 2010. And
did I say 2013? I meant 2010.
Yeah, 2010. Yeah. They are shorthanded. They're trailing Nashville. And Patrick Kane scores with 13.6 seconds to go while Hossa's in the box. They go to overtime. Hossa's still in the box. They kill off that penalty. And then he comes out and gets the game-winning goal. You're absolutely right. If they go to Nashville down 3-1 facing elimination, who knows the trajectory of where this team goes? You know, they probably don't get that 2010 Stanley Cup, and, you know, it was tough years in 11 and 12. So you just never know. It's just like the Cubs, had they not found a way to pull things out in Game 7, you just never know if you'll get back to that epic spot to win a championship. So I totally agree with you. I think those two goals by Kane and Hossa in 2010 in the first round against the Nashville Predators cannot be understated. I think they're the two biggest goals in franchise history in this recent run because it really set the foundation for what this team has been able to do. And once you get that first championship, I don't want to say you're playing with house money, but you're kind of playing with house money. Everything right. changes. You don't have the pressure. Like, can you imagine what the Cubs would be dealing with right now?
Oh my gosh.
Every game, had they not won Game 7, and what Madden would still be answering and all the players. I mean, it changes things dramatically when you get that championship and when you do it with a young team early on, and that's certainly what the Hawks were able to do in 2010.
Great teams find a way to win, and I feel like that's the Blackhawks. And you mentioned 2010 and 2013, of course. But, you know, you bring up the we talked to Ryan Hartman. This is a young guy that grew up in Chicago idolizing, you know, Kaner and Taves, and now he's playing with these guys. And you forget that Kane and Taves, they're growing up, man. Taves is, what, 29 now?
Yeah, they're 28.
28? Okay.
You look at Hartman, Pete, he skipped school in high school to go to the 2013 rally in Grant Park. I mean, you know, these guys, it's funny, you know, you look at Hinostroza and Hartman, they have the current Blackhawks like up on their wall in their, you know, in their home as kids. That was the poster. They didn't have Jordan over their bed. They had Taves or Kane or whoever. And now they're skating with these guys. So it is a little surreal because I think a lot of us think you know, Kane and Taves are still very young. This is year 10 of their career, which is mind-boggling in itself. But they're no longer the kids anymore. We heard earlier today, you know, Kane is he's not going to go with the mullet and the stripes on the side of the head. These guys have grown up. They've grown up in front of our eyes, and they've been able to win championships along the way. So it is pretty funny to see, you know, the kind of the passing of the torch of guys that come into that dressing room and see how they adapt to playing with four future Hall of Famers and players that have already been to the top of the hockey mountain several times.
The cutest thing Hartman said is that he's ready for the playoffs because he's watched a lot of playoff hockey. So that qualifies all of us ready for the playoffs because we've all watched a lot of playoffs.
There you go. We're all ready to go. If we
Dave Bennett's ready, too.
It's pretty funny.
Pat, what time's the special on tonight on Comcast Sportsnet?
It's on at 8:30, and if you're locked into the Cubs, it's on again at 10:30. I think the 10:30 will be a better show. I'm going to make a costume change midway through, and I think it'll be just a little stronger.
Well, I'm gonna put you on hold for a second. We got to take a quick break, and I have a few things that I want to talk to you about your wife. Okay.
Okay. Sounds good.
Pat Boyle from Comcast Sportsnet.
I have a couple more hockey questions.
Well, you can get to those too.
Okay,
yes.
I guess priority.
Back Blackhawks playoff preview tonight on Comcast Sportsnet, 8:30 and 10:30 at 720 WGN.
The Steve Cochran Show.
Sandberg's here, producer of the program.
You know, I have a new husband.
Boyle means business. Comcast Sportsnet.
There's some systems at the house.
Wait, what do you mean by systems?
Here we go.
So we have a list. So on the list yesterday, there was Diet Coke. He drinks Diet Coke. So I bought some Diet Coke. I brought it home from the grocery store, and there's an empty Diet Coke box sitting on the counter next to the refrigerator.
You cannot be serious!
He wrote it on the list, but left the empty container sitting on the counter.
I will look for you. I will find you. And I will kill you.
He works at night, so I waited for the phone call.
Did he know something was wrong at that point?
Oh, yeah, he did.
Hey!
I said, I bought Diet Coke, but I noticed the empty container was sitting on the counter. Were you keeping it for something?
Hello? Hello? Don't hang up on me. I want to talk to you.
Do you ever catch yourself in the middle of these moments, these Sandberg moments, where you go, maybe Steve's right. Maybe I am nuts.
That's amazing. You're crazy.
720 WGN. Pete McMurray in for Steve Cochran on the phone with us. Mary Sandberg Boyle's husband, Pat Boyle, who has a special tonight on Comcast Sportsnet, Blackhawks preview. Pat, it's got to be tough married to Mary. Very type A.
Very. You figured that one out, huh?
Very. I'm married to a very type A woman, too, but I think Mary is a little over the top.
Well, I will say this, and to all the listeners, she does play it up a bit for radio. She does take this to an extreme, but not too much. of an extreme, but I will let everybody know she does. She has her own blind spots that, of course, never come out on the Steve Cochran Show. But I witness these blind spots on a daily basis, and I'm able to overcome them. And I actually don't have the forum. Like I don't use the Blackhawks in between periods to voice, you know, her propensity to not see crumbs that land on the floor and just doesn't kind of, you know, the floor kind of just, she just kind of lets that go a little bit, doesn't throw out things that have expired in the fridge, you know, things like that.
Well, because he eats, he's in charge of eating anything that's left over in the fridge.
Right.
So I don't throw anything
usually
away.
Usually men are. Yeah.
Because I don't know if it might get used.
It's hilarious because you literally, there's not a meal we've ever had at a restaurant where you've not taken something home, you know, because you never finish your meal. You're able to cut a burger into quarters and eat, you know, three quarters of it.
Yes.
And then we bring the quarter home, which is a bite.
Yep, in a huge styrofoam container.
And and it lines up against the other styrofoam containers, and she'll never touch them. No. And so it's my job as the garbage disposal to go through there and, you know, take care of business.
Of course. Wow.
Sometimes he has the most hodgepodge meals going. A meatball, a sausage, a quarter of a burger, a little bit of fried rice.
That's right.
Whose fault is that? That's
I don't eat leftovers. I don't eat leftovers, but I won't throw away food. So
I don't understand. Why don't you eat leftovers?
I don't want to eat something twice. I'm not eating beef 2 days in a row. So if I ate the burger last night,
then why bring it home?
Right.
Because
why you bring
it
home?
Throw it away. There's people that don't have enough food.
Yes, but we bring it home and you won't eat it. You know your husband will.
Yes.
So you won't feel guilty.
Yes.
I don't understand why your wife won't go to a bear game when it's cold.
Well, she's all about ease and comfort, mm-hmm. and she's said about her problems with layering.
Yes.
Yeah. So she loves being at home and kind of, you know, enjoying the couch life and just not having to. First of all, we went to Pearl Jam at Wrigley, and you know, paid a lot of money for the seats and really enjoyed the concert. But she doesn't like being around a lot of people. And I'm like, well, honey, this is like.
Halfway through, I said, are you going to be mad at me if I don't want to stay till the end? And he's like, well, what time are you thinking? I said, I could go anytime.
I'm like, we're at least staying to the
end. We're on the field. And it was like, there's just too much going on for me. And
you need to disclose that before we throw down the money on the ticket.
I know.
But weren't you with Cap? So you had to have great seats.
We were with Cap. We did have great seats.
Phenomenal.
Yeah, good memory.
Phenomenal
Dave.
Seats.
Yeah, so.
Ridiculous. And the beauty with him is he's, you know, he's Facebooking it and
he Snapchatted the entire time.
Of course.
Periscoping. So you leave the concert, but you still have access to the concert because that's the way he rolls.
Yeah, we watched it in the Uber. We just watched all his chats on the way home. So
we could tell Cap stories for an hour. Pat, thanks for coming on, man. Good to hear your voice. We'll tune in tonight on Comcast Sportsnet.
All right, take care, guys, and go Hawks.
All right, thanks buddy. Pat. Mary's husband, Pat Boyle. All right, Bill and Wendy. Bill and Wendy coming up next. We're live on CLTV and 720 WGN.
720 WGN. This is a special announcement for all Americans who owe back taxes to the IRS or state. Pay attention. There's a special toll-free hotline set up especially for you. This hotline will give you free information on how you can legally reduce or eliminate your tax debt. Call the taxpayer hotline today at 1-800-442-4840. Grab a pen or put the number in your cell phone. 1-800-442-4840. You'll speak with qualified professionals who will tell you how to stop the collection calls, IRS letters, bank levies, and wage garnishments. And they'll deal directly with the IRS on your behalf so you don't have to. Even if you haven't filed returns or are already in a payment plan, you can still get relief. New IRS settlement policies have opened the doors for a fresh start. But hurry, this won't last forever.